Hey there, I'm so glad that you're here. My name is Jessica Hoddle. I'm your host, and today is line number 30, which is all about you need confidence with my sweet friend, Jennifer Allwood. You're listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a number one bestselling author, wife, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Every week, I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think to change the way you live. I've had the pleasure of knowing Jennifer Allwood for a few years now, actually more than a few, roughly seven. We were in a mastermind together, and I have just watched her grow leaps and bounds just in her own personal life and watched her business grow. She is a recent author of a best-selling book, Fear is Not the Boss of You, and we kind of dive into the different topics of the book, but really something that she's passionate about is this idea that women feel they need confidence to move forward. If they just had the confidence, then they would be able to do all the things that God has called them to do. And so we want to really dive into this lie of you need confidence. And she starts to talk about it's courage. We also talk about the idea that haters need to be your motivation, how to really pursue what God has called on your heart, especially to the mamas out there that maybe feel as though they have to wait till their kids get older and they don't know how to juggle or balance that, the need to fulfill their call and to also be a mom. We just have so many good nuggets in our interview together. So let's just go ahead and get right to it. Jen, I'm so glad that you're here on What's the Truth because you have so much truth to share. You know, I think one, it's been so awesome to see your journey over the past, I mean, how many years we've known each other. Like we are actually in person, real friends. Yes. and we communicate and go back and forth. And you have this amazing new book out, Fear is Not the Boss of You. And so I'm excited to talk to you today about confidence, about fear, and really just bringing truth to this lie that you need confidence. And I know that you're passionate about this.
Yes.
So to start us off, Jen, how about you just start addressing why this lie literally lights you up?
Yeah. So thanks for having me here, Jessica. I'm super excited to chat with you and your audience. So yeah, so when I was writing the book, Fear is Not the Boss of You, and I was thinking about the topic of confidence, and I was thinking about how I mentor and coach about 2,000 women in like a paid business group every month. And so I kind of have this like front row seat to mindset things and what's going on in the minds of women and women business owners. And it is amazing to me how many people are waiting for confidence before they do the thing, before they put the course out into the world, or before they start a website, or before they put something up for sale on Facebook Marketplace. They're waiting until they feel confident. And so, I know this because so many of the times the questions I get from my students are, how do I feel more confident about XYZ? Or I really want to do XYZ, but I just feel like I need to wait until I feel more confident about it. And they almost take their lack of confidence as a sign that the timing must be wrong, or the topic must be wrong, or they might not be ready for it yet, or maybe this isn't what God really wants for them to do. And so when I was writing that chapter of the book, I was thinking about how, gosh, so many people are waiting for confidence, and confidence may or may not ever come. The truth is, I think that we should be really leaning in towards the topic of courage, because like when we had kids, I didn't expect my children to like know how to walk the first time they tried. You know what I mean? Like that would be insane of me. And so they surely couldn't have any confidence in the area of walking, because how could they be confident about something they'd never done? And yet I think so often we as women and we as business owners, we expect something out of us, out of ourselves, that we wouldn't expect out of other people. And so I go down this whole rabbit trail in the book. It's not a rabbit trail. It's such a good topic of how confidence should not be the thing that we're trying to shoot for. I even actually named the title of that chapter, Jessica, Confidence is a Crock of Crap. And when my publisher got the manuscript, they're like, all right, Jen, like we love you, but we're going to have to dial that back a notch. Yeah. So I basically just talk about all the differences between confidence and courage, because the thing is, people think they need to wait until they feel a certain way to do something. And the truth is, I think that you need to do something in spite of your fear, in spite of your feelings. And confidence is a feeling, by the way. And so I know, Jessica, that so often my feelings will lead me down the wrong path. Like if my husband and I get into a squabble, there's times I feel like giving him the what for, you know what I mean? And that's never going to bring us to a place of like fruitfulness and peace in the home. There's times when I, you know, get done with something like this podcast episode with you and I'll feel like going to eat a tub of raw chocolate chip cookie dough because that's what my feelings, you know, I feel like cookie dough. And so even though we're feeling fear, that shouldn't be the thing that guides and steers us, because often your feelings are not truth tellers. They will often lead you to a direction and to a place that you really don't want to be. And so I'm super passionate about women not waiting until they feel confident to do the thing. Like, do it in spite of your fear. Do it when God says, be obedient right off the bat, because delayed obedience is disobedience, and do it scared. That's what the whole book's about.
I think, well, one, I love the beautiful example of it, of what you were sharing, but I also think that in every category, there's this idea that this feeling has to be met. When we think about motive or fitness, we people are like, I just got to be motivated. I just got to get my motivation, right? And sometimes that can be a false illusion of what we look in the business world as confidence.
Yes.
Not everybody feels motivated to work out, right? Like 100%. we do it because we know it's good for our bodies.
Right.
But when we look at business and the creative world and all those things, it's like, I have the confidence to do live video. So can we go even deeper into this?
Sure. Absolutely.
It's not just, I think it's deeper than confidence, of more of insecurity. Okay. Would you agree?
I would agree. Say that again. It's deeper than confidence. You're thinking that it's insecurity.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, the confidence of you don't feel worthy enough to pursue the thing. So you want,
you know what I think it is sometimes? Like, I agree with that, Jess. And I also think this, I also think sometimes we'll use our lack of confidence as a way to self-protect and say, mm-hmm. we're not going to do the thing, because it's easier to say, I don't feel confident, therefore it's probably not right, than it is to actually try something and possibly have it fail, which probably does go back to insecurity. I mean, most people are afraid of failure, but it's interesting because in coaching all the women that I do every month, and I think that you would probably agree with this, there are as many women that I coach that are afraid of success as there are afraid of failure.
Yeah.
Which is trippy, because I didn't realize that that would be the thing. And I didn't realize that I also had a fear of success for a while until I got to a certain point in my business and started to kind of like self-sabotage and get stuck. And then suddenly I was like, oh, okay. So apparently I was comfortable getting to this level and this level and this level. But once I got to this level, suddenly I didn't feel worthy anymore. Hmm. So,
and I think that comes to fear of success is what are people going to say? Yeah. How are they going to say that I make money? Or, and especially as a believer, if you make money, there's all kinds of things that, you know, come against you with that. And do you find it maybe is just an excuse, like you said? And for example, if we even look at our Christian walk, some people mm-hmm. before moving, they'll say, well, I just need to pray about it, which is good.
Yes.
But it also becomes that kind of
excuse.
Where we want to pray, but we also say, well, I'm going to pray about it, which is really, I don't want to do it. And this is my short answer to you.
Well, when we get to heaven someday, what do we want God to say? Well done, my good and faithful servant, right? And so, you know, the very word done implies that there was some doing involved. Mm-hmm. And the Bible talks about doing all over the place, but I think so many Christians do exactly that. They say, well, I'm going to pray. And I actually talk in one of the chapters in the book about how when the kids were little, Jessica, we used to take them to a bowling alley that had these like bumper rails for kids, and they would roll the ball like down this little thing that looked like a slide, and then they'd put the bumper rails up, because if the bumper rails were not up, like the kids would throw a gutter ball, you know, every single time. And as their mother, it was just so painful to watch. I'm like, oh my Lord, how are they this bad? So the cool thing is when they put up like the kiddie rails, you know, on the sides, then the ball bounces back and forth inside of that, but it keeps heading in the direction that it's supposed to go. And I talk in the book about how so often we're like, well, I need to pray about it. I need God to really show me. I need to do, you know, whatever. But I do think that we serve a loving enough Father that He allows us to make a lot of our own choices. Like, you know, I think that there's times where I'm like, well, I wonder where we should go on vacation. Should we go to, you know, New York City or Chicago? And I don't know that God always cares about all of those things, as long as it's within the bumper rails of His best for us, if that makes sense. And so I talk in the book, like, if you are, you know, praying about it and you are seeking God's will, could it be that God's like, girlfriend, I don't care. Like, I'll go where you go on this one. You know what I mean? I mean, there's certain times when I pray about stuff, Jessica, and I know in my knower that God wants me to go a certain direction. And there's other times where I feel like, I'm getting silence. And I wonder if in those times, if we were just to be confident enough, not courageous enough, to just make a decision and go in one direction or the other, do we trust that God is a big enough God that if we pick the wrong thing, that he can back that bus up? I mean, you know, we put God so much in a box that we're like, well, I don't want to choose wrong. I don't want to choose wrong. I don't want to choose wrong. So we choose nothing. And I think sometimes there's got to be some doing and some movement and some decision-making made so that God kind of has something that he can actually work with.
Yeah. And I think too, even just looking at it from the scripture, is sometimes doctrines come from, if you mess up,
yes,
God is going to do this to you. And I think that is what causes a lot of fear in people, because they're so afraid to get it wrong that God is going to punish them, strike them down, do all these things.
Yeah.
Versus looking at them from this side of, I love you and I know that you're not going to be perfect. And I'm here to, like you said, kind of like back the bus up and get you back on the tracks. Like, I always think of a train. Like, if we get off the train, we're going to end up in the woods somewhere, but he's kind enough to get us back on the tracks and keep us going.
Yeah. I love thinking of God is God the Father. I mean, I know there's a lot of other ways to think of him, but God the Father is my favorite. And that perhaps for me comes out of a lot of places of hurt in my life. And I kind of talk about that in the book. But so when I think about a good father, and I think about a good daddy, and I think about the fact that we've got three biological children, we're in the process of adopting a little girl. And I mean, if my kids make a decision that's not great, my husband isn't up there shaming them. He's not, you know, reprimanding them. He's not, how could you be so dumb as to have done? That is not how a good father loves his children. A good father loves his kids back enough to like try to bring them back to center and get them back on the right track and perhaps have to discipline them in some way. But when I think of like God the Father, I'm like, okay, if I mess this up, I mean, the Lord knows my heart. He knows that I was trying. Like, I went into it with the best of intentions. And it's almost like, you know, if I have one of the kids in our house who's trying their absolute best in a certain class and they get a C, it's not like I'm going to, you know, ground them and whatever else. Now, if I have a kiddo in the house who did not do any of their work, they didn't do any of their assignments, they jacked around in class all the time, well, then I'm going to be disappointed and we're going to have a conversation. But I think sometimes we forget that God the Father is a good daddy. He's really good and he wants the best for us, but he also allows us to make decisions about things. He gives us great gifts. And so I think that so often we forget that version of him.
That's true. And I love that you also talk about in the book, the emotional side, which ties into the business. And even you were talking about the fear of success, the fear of failure, and how past wounds in any type, shape, or form, childhood, relationships with girlfriends, you know, relationships, whatever it is, can really limit your potential in your business. And I don't think we talk about that enough.
Yeah.
You know, of what people have said about you, of not being, you know, you're never going to be smart. You're never going to have those things. You just come from this poor family or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Into that. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah. And I talked about this back in January. I did like, I think a 4-part series on my podcast on the Jennifer Allwood Show that was about this topic, but I think that like, we would love it if we could have like, Jen, you know, personal Jen over here and business Jen over here. And the two never like, you know, intertwine and intersect, but that's just really like not how the world works. And so it's interesting to me how there will be different things that pop up in my business that I will be like, well, where did that come from? And then when we dig down, I'm like, oh, it came from this thing that happened when I was a kid, or this relationship that went sour, or when this person spoke this over me. And, you know, it's interesting how sometimes we think we get over stuff, Jess, but God will bring them back up right in front of us to make sure, you know, that we've healed and to really make sure it's a healing this time. And for me, it happens all the time in my business. And I wish that it wouldn't, but it's like God uses my business to teach me lessons often and to help me to heal from things. And so I encourage women, if you're like hitting up against something, like the whole first chapter of Fear Is Not the Boss of You is on being stuck. And so many women are stuck in business and they're like hitting up against this, the same mountain. They can't get past a certain income level, or they find that when they do start having some success, they start self-sabotaging, or they really are suffering from imposter syndrome and that's keeping them stuck. Like, I really encourage women to dig really deep on getting to the root of that, because those are things that God really wants to heal us from. And when he heals us from him in our business, it shows up in our personal life. And when we're healed in our personal life, it shows up in our business. Like, it's so cool how it all works. But when people are stuck in business, I usually know it's because they're stuck in their personal world somewhere.
No, that's true. I agree with you. I mean, it just, it all interconnects. Like you said, it's, you know, when I talk with people about combining faith and fitness together, it's like an unheard of thing. Yeah. You know, it's, I didn't know I could bring God into my fitness. And we just kind of put him in that box of church and just reading the Bible. And like, that's just where God is. But if he's in us, and you know, all throughout, especially the New Testament, it's like, we're his temple. It says it so many times. Yes. And so he's with us, whether we're swimming in the pool, we're painting our chimney outside white from the brick.
Right, love it. Yes, it was so fun. Did you saw that? You saw that on Instagram? It was so much fun.
It doesn't matter, because if he's with us, wherever our body goes, he goes. Whether we're moving our bodies to fitness or in our business or in our relationships, it's just this point of it matters. Yeah. And I love that you address that in the book, because I think it's important. Not a lot of people talk about it. It's just, you know, always this higher thinking and higher this, and you know, you're this and this and this, without just saying like, hey, it's okay. It's kind to yourself to heal so that you can flourish in other areas. You know, he's a fruit bearer. So when we're pruned, it's so we can bear more fruit. It's not so that he can give and take away. It's just that these things need to be cut, healed, so that more fruit can bear.
100%. And it's interesting, because I love that saying from Joyce Meyer, New Level, New Devil. And so it's interesting, like every time my business, you know, does something different or up levels or changes or shifts, or, you know, just up levels is a really good word. It's almost like God and I have to like do the work here. Okay. Are we good here? We're good here, Jen. Okay. And we're going to move on up. And then you get to the next level and there's like, huh, okay. The stuff I used to worry about a couple of years ago, like that's not even a big deal to me now. And you know, I feel like I've kind of fought those battles and slayed those dragons. But now at this level, like there's a whole new thing. Like, I didn't realize that I was so concerned about what people thought of me. I didn't realize that I was so concerned with, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then it's almost like God and I have to do work on this level, and I have to kind of, you know, figure it out and heal wounds and get past it and get my head on straight before I can move to the next one. And so, I don't know that it's ever going to be finished.
No, we're always in that sanctification, right? Or we're set apart, but we're always in that becoming. Yeah.
Yes.
We're always in that becoming. Our original
That is a good book title.
Note that, tweet that, share that. Sorry, nobody else can take it. I'm just kidding. Jen, I've known you for how many years? When was that?
I think it was 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, six, at least.
Yep.
At least, I would say 7.
We both had baby businesses then, didn't we? At least I did.
Yeah. You've grown so much. Mm-hmm. So you went from painting, you had your, I remember you had your painting business where you were going to people's houses. You had a team of, was it like 20?
I had a team of 8 women that painted.
Oh, 8. I thought it was so much more than that for some reason.
No, gosh, I could, 20 more. No, but there was 8 of us. And we did like 3 episodes for Extreme Home Makeover, the television show. And I had a client like fly me to Belize to look at a project.
I remember that.
Business was really, really good. And, you know, it was really good. And I loved it until I didn't love it anymore.
Yeah. And then you have an online membership community.
Yeah. And so then, for painting, I started selling painting videos. And that's when I think you and I first met. I was selling painting videos in the online space about 6 years ago.
And DVDs. You created DVDs.
DVDs, girl. The kind you put in a VCR or a disc player. Yep. Crazy, right? And I remember when we sold $100,000 worth of painting videos in 14 months. And I was like, that's sure interesting. That was a lot easier than being out in people's houses painting. And I was like, good Lord, this internet space, it's like the wild, wild west. And you know, this was 6 years ago. And so I think when I met you is when I was really deciding, you know what, I'm going to really work the internet, because I'm an introvert. And so I love the internet. It feels really safe to me, safer than like a big room of people. And I really wanted to focus on growing my social media online. And so like today I have 360 some thousand Facebook followers. Mm-hmm. And so when people kept seeing my social media growing, they started asking me to teach them what I was doing. And it was so weird, Jessica, because I was thinking to myself, I am not a teacher. And I remember getting a phone call from a woman. She was a painter in Florida, and she left a message on my answering machine. Like, remember when we had answering machines that kind of blinked on your kitchen counter?
Yeah.
And she was like, hello, like, you don't know me. I got your number off the Googles. And I was wondering if you could like coach me on how to build my business online. And I was like, what is she even saying? Like, coach her. Like, I'm not a coach. And I felt so intimidated every time somebody would ask me, until one day I was like, okay. I've had so many people ask, like, what is it actually that I'm afraid of? And what I was afraid of was that I wasn't smart enough, and that I wasn't as smart as other people, and that I wouldn't know what I was doing, and that people would see that I was a fraud. Same thing every woman who's listening to this podcast has gone through at some point in her life or career. And so then I made the decision almost 5 years ago, you know what, I'm going to start a little paid group. Like a little group, it's $47 a month, where I teach people how to get more followers on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. And now we have 2,000 people at $47 a month in my little paid group. So it's completely changed our life. And so, yeah,
it's
not because I was confident, but because I was courageous.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was like, you were even saying that, you're like, I can remember you thinking about writing a book 7 years ago.
Yes.
You remember the process? We're like, who do we need to get? Yes. I don't want to write this thing. Can I just have somebody?
Can I hire somebody? And I don't know if you remember this, but I even had the title of the book, Jess. So because I came from like the DIY painting, you know, world, and I love everything that, you know, is HGTV related and house flipping, and Jason and I have, you know, decorated and totally redone our house. And it's all like on the internet. I thought to myself, well, I'll just take like all of my content from my blog about our house stuff and all of our projects, and I'll put it into a book, and it's going to be called Hot Mess, not your typical DIY book. And I was going to have a picture of my then little toddler daughter, Ava. She's now a teenager, but she was going to be standing. I had this picture of her with a sword, and she was standing on a bar stool in the middle of our living room, and she'd made like a fort, like blanket forts all over the living room. And she was standing on a bar stool, and she had the sword straight up in the air, and she was wearing a tutu, and it was just like the cutest thing ever. And so it was kind of a play on the fact that Pinterest looks so perfect, and a typical home is always, you know, a hot mess. And that was what the book was going to be about. And so I can remember my husband, it was 4 or 5 years ago, he put me up at a hotel. I basically just like copied and pasted 10 years worth of blog posts into a Word document. And then I was like, all right, somebody's going to find this. Like, and I remember like for a year thinking, what do I do with this now? Like, it's a Word document, and there's no book publishers knocking down my door. Like, I didn't know how to write a book proposal. I didn't have an agent. I had no idea what I was doing. So yeah, that book died and went to book heaven somewhere.
Here's not the boss. It just transformed, right? It's just like,
it did.
And so I think, I see this a lot in this, I don't know, maybe the hustle culture or the business world. It's this whole idea that let your hater be your motivation.
Yeah.
You know, as you're pursuing things, as you're trying new things, it's just kind of in the back of our heads of, well, the people that hate you, let them hate you as you pursue this. So what is your kind of take on that? Because I know I have mine.
So, well, I've got two teenage boys that have even told me that before. You know, mom, let your haters be your motivators. And it's interesting because in my head, I'm like, how do I have haters? How does anybody have haters? But it's interesting, Jess, you can be the juiciest peach in the whole wide world, and you will still find people who do not like peaches. It's the wildest thing, because I'm like, I am a nice person. And yet, not everybody thinks that. And it's not like I've got, you know, lines and lines. I mean, maybe I do, and I don't know about it. But I don't love the let your haters be your motivators line, because I think that essentially, it's like almost turning your haters into like idols of sorts. And it feels to me like you're doing things for the wrong reasons then. Because I talk in Fear's Not the Boss of You about doing things on this side of heaven that you feel like God is calling you and asking you to do. And so in other words, it's a lot of the book is about being obedient. Yeah. And if you're doing things for haters, is that obedience? I would argue no. I think it's the wrong motivation. And I also don't know that that's the heart of God. It feels kind of yucky. And in fact, I think that if we do things out of obedience, I know that there's plenty of scriptures, none of which I can quote right now without the Bible in front of me, but there's plenty of scriptures that basically say, you know, that God will let some of the people that have hated on you kind of have a front row seat to how he rises you up and places you in high, wide open places. And I can tell you that when that happens, that sometimes you would think, oh, that's going to feel so good when my haters see me succeed. And I think that what's the most free is when that happens and you're like, it doesn't affect you at all. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's happened so many times. And that's how you know you're free. And that's how you know you're really free from other people's opinions is yep. when God does, you know, give you beauty for ashes, and the people that have maybe not been kind to you have gotten to see it, and they maybe come back around and apologize, or, you know, and, but yet it doesn't affect you. You're like, oh, that's sweet. But it's not like, see me now. You know, I think that's just, that feels gross to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And I think, you know, in Romans, he talks about, Paul talks about how bless those who curse you.
Yes.
Bless. And he says it, he's like back to back. Because he yep. knows that our sinful way will mm-hmm. want to go to, you did this to me, yep. now I'm going to do this to you.
Yeah.
And I think 100%. It just ties beautifully kind of into that fear mentality almost of, I have to prove these people wrong.
Right.
Right. And I remember even in my childhood, when my mom would say things to me, even to this day, I'm like, I need to prove her wrong. But mm. I was just living my life to prove my mom wrong.
Yeah.
And I was,
and that's bondage.
Yeah. That's bondage. In the process.
Yeah.
And I think that they're, you know, kind of talking to moms now where moms feel like they have to put everything on hold now, mm-hmm. you know, of, and I know that you are passionate about this.
I am passionate about this. Yeah.
Whose head and how it goes down in line.
Yeah.
So I would love you to share that. And just speaking to the mamas kind of as we wrap up of, it's okay to pursue what's on your heart. There's different seasons for different things. Yeah. Cause I'm obviously not a mom, so I can't speak to that.
Sure. No, but I would love
to speak to that.
So yeah, we have 4 kids. We have 3 biological children. And then, we are 19 months into the process of adopting a 5-year-old little girl. And so I've got, you know, a big spread on my kids. Our oldest is going to college this fall. And I can tell you that I own my painting company. And then what happened, just because we got pregnant with our oldest son, Noah, not we, I was pregnant. My husband was not carrying that baby, but I got pregnant with Noah, and we had made the decision that I really wanted to be home and stay home full time. And I was like, well, how do we do this? And so we figured out if I hired other women to go paint for me, that I could stay home and raise the kids. And it wasn't even like it was this grand plan. It just kind of, we just kind of kept taking the next right step and the next right step. And then suddenly we looked back and we're like, huh, God built this like whole business. This is amazing. I get to stay home and raise the children and still make a really good income. And so I talk in Fears Not the Boss of You about, I see that there's this, interesting shift from a lot of entrepreneurs right now, female moms, who there seems to be a lot of people that I feel like are sacrificing family and putting career above family. And I think that that's super dangerous and out of alignment. And so, but then I see like this completely other side of women who are putting their whole life on hold until the kids are, you know, in school, or until the kids are done with middle school, or until the kids are out of the house, or until the kids are married. But now we have grandkids. And so I do think that women need to remember that you were a complete whole person before you ever became someone's wife, before you ever became someone's mom. And God has, you know, dreams and visions and a call on your life, regardless of if you have children or not. And I think so often we put things on hold because of the kids. And a lot of times we're actually using the children as like excuses, Jess, on why we can't. Like, I have to wait till they're all in school, and then I have to wait because blah, blah, blah. And I think sometimes we do that as a way to self-protect, because it's easier to use the kids as an excuse than it is to go do the thing and risk failing. But I really go deep into one of the chapters in the book talking about how we outsource so much of our children's education to other people. You know, they go to school to learn, and they've got, you know, a Spanish teacher. And when it comes time for driving lessons, they have somebody that teaches them that, and they've got somebody that teaches them how to play football and dance lessons. But like, who teaches our kids courage? They have to learn that at home. They can't learn that from YouTube. They can't learn that from watching movie stars. They have to watch mom and dad be courageous. And one of the ways as mothers that we can demonstrate courage to our kids is doing the things on the side of heaven that God has called us to, and giving them a front row seat to that. I mean, my kids know so much about my business. They know dollars. They know how much money we make. They know how much money we actually bring home. They know how many books mom has sold. They know a lot about the business. And my husband and I have been really intentional with that, because I want them to see both the highs and the lows of being an entrepreneur. And I want them to see that mom keeps trying to show up for doing things that I'm scared to do. You know, when I'm asked to speak on big stages or just putting a book out in the world, by the way, that's really scary. You know, you've done it, Jessica. And so, I'm just super passionate about not using your kids as an excuse. But also giving your kids a front row seat to watching you be courageous. Because when they see you be courageous with your own life, they will remember that. And that is the one of the best lessons you can give them. You can talk about courage all day long over dinner, you know, try out for the soccer team or go out for student council or whatever. But if your kids are hearing you say that, and yet they know that mom has a dream in her heart, but she's too scared to do anything about it, like that's called hypocrisy. And they can smell that a while away. So yeah, kids are little walking conviction devices because, you know, they don't subscribe to your BS. And so I'm super passionate about moms being courageous in front of them.
I think that's a perfect example because we actually have mirroring neurons too in our brains. So we actually will begin to mirror what we see repetitively.
Yeah.
And which is why as children, we develop so many beliefs and habits is because we're with our caregivers all the time. And so we begin to mirror, like, it's like being with your best friend. You probably have certain mannerisms,
tendencies,
you know, where you do, because it's, you're mirroring each other. And so you're picking up on those things. And I just love that beautiful example of you kind of encouraging and kind of equipping women to, if God has called you to pursue something, pursue it. I mean, of course, if he's not, that's okay. Like there are seasons where you're called to go, called to rest, called to, you know, just help other, whatever it is. Right. And you just know, my friend, camping women.
Do you know my friend, Jamie Ivy? Do you know who Jamie is? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jamie had a saying that she put on Instagram one time. And I remember when I read it, it was like a sucker punch in a good way. But she said something along the lines of, we can't teach our children to be sold out for the gospel when all they see is mom being sold out for them. Mm. And I was like, oh, wow, that will preach. So such a great, great line.
So Jennifer, where do you want people to, first of all, fear's not the boss of you.
Yes.
Where do you want them to go to get that? And where can they hang out with you?
So if they want to hang out with me online, find me on Instagram. Just go find Jennifer Allwood on Instagram. That's my favorite play place right now. And I love being in my Instagram DMs and, you know, responding to people. If they're listening to this podcast, then that means they like podcasts. So they could also find the Jennifer Allwood Show and hook up with me there. If they're interested in the book, so it's in all the regular places. Amazon is, you know, obviously huge. Barnes & Noble online, Target online, Walmart online. Praying that bookstores get to open back up, Jess.
Amen.
And when they do, it'll be on the shelf, you know, at Barnes & Noble. But until then, yeah, I would love for them to check it out in the online space and grab one. That would be fantastic.
Well, thanks for just sharing your wisdom and your authenticity and your heart with us today, Jen. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
P.S. One more thing. If you've ever felt like you weren't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, thin enough, strong enough, worthy enough, or doing enough, then my best-selling book, Know Your Worth, is for you. If you knew what you were worth, would you settle for anything less? It's not uncommon to feel inadequate, whether it's issues surrounding your career, your body, relationships, or your finances. You will discover gems to apply in your own life as I take you through my own journey of how I was able to overcome the unthinkable by realizing my worth wasn't tied into things or people, but to God. In this book, I really walk you through the how-to of stop settling for relationships that do nothing but cause you pain. Find the tools you need to be successful in life. Realize you are beautiful just the way you are. Refuse to settle for anything less than what's God's best for your life. And recognize that no matter what your past looks like, it doesn't have to be your future.